ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28. Puranjan becomes a woman in the next life, and today we're reading verse 29. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. It was fixed that Vaidarbhi, daughter of King Vidarbha, was to be married to a very powerful man, Malayatvaj, an inhabitant of the Pandu country. After conquering other princes, he married the daughter of King Vidarbha. It is customary among Kshatriyas for a princess to be offered under certain conditions. For instance, Draupadi was offered in marriage to one who could pierce a fish with an arrow simply by seeing the reflection of that fish. Krishna married one of his queens after conquering seven strong bulls. The Vedic system is for a daughter of a king to be offered under certain conditions. Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vidarbha, was offered to a great devotee and powerful king. Since King Malayadvaj was both a great devotee and was both a powerful king and a great devotee, he fulfilled all the requirements. The name Malayadvaj signifies a great devotee who stands as firm as Malaya Hill and through his propaganda makes other devotees similarly as firm. Such a Mahabhagavat can prevail over the opinions of all others. A strong devotee makes propaganda against all other spiritual conceptions, namely Gyan, Karma, and Yoga. With this devotional flag unfurled, he always stands fast to conquer other conceptions of transcendental realization. Whenever there is an argument between a devotee and a non-devotee, the pure, strong devotee comes out victorious. The word Pandya comes from the word panda, meaning knowledge. Unless one is highly learned, he cannot conquer non-devotional conceptions. The word pada means transcendental and pura means city. The pada pura in Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God, and the word jaya refers to one who can conquer. This means that a pure devotee who is strong in devotional service and who has conquered all non-devotional conceptions can also conquer the kingdom of God. In other words, one can conquer the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, only by rendering devotional service. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Ajita, meaning that no one can conquer him. But a devotee by strong devotional service and sincere attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead can easily conquer him. Lord Krishna is fear personified for everyone, but he voluntarily agreed to fear the stick of Mother Yashoda. Krishna, God, cannot be conquered by anyone but his devotee. Such a devotee kindly married the daughter of King Vidarbha. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gena Gena Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we're continuing to read from this very nice chapter and this allegory from Narada Muni. And today there's a few interesting points in the verse. First of all, that in Vedic times, the kings, especially the great kings, you know, like great Kshatriyas, they had to prove themselves when they got married. So there was, you know, for Kshatriyas, physical prowess was very important, heroic nature, prowess, strength. So they had to prove themselves by actually passing a test, some physical, you know, how would you call it, challenge. A physical challenge had to be part of the marriage. So especially very qualified daughters of kings, you know, very exalted princesses, they you know, required this from their future husbands to show their prowess, you know, publicly, practically speaking. Everybody had to see how powerful they were. So we know from Srila Prabhupada's examples in the purport and from many other stories in the scriptures that there were many cases in which the Lord himself, when he appeared as Lord Ram and when he appeared as Krishna, did actually this. You know, in order to obtain Sita, he had to string the bow of Lord Shiva and show his prowess, and in this way impress everyone and show how powerful he was. Also, in Lord Krishna, in the purport is mentioned about the fight with seven strong bulls, and also there are other examples of kidnapping of Rukmini and fighting also with princesses. So there's an element of physical challenge to show the prowess of the Kshatriyas. That is their nature. And Srila Prabhupada very nicely starts by showing what level the Kshatriyas show their qualifications and their prowess, and then goes to the next level, which is that of the devotees, and where is their prowess. And also with a little bit kind of Kshatriya mood, because when he starts to present the qualifications and activities of a great devotee, a strong devotee, it comes out a little bit also like following the Kshatriya spirit. He talks about the devotional flag unfurled. It sounds like a battlefield that you're going with the flags of the chariots. So he very nicely kind of goes from the Kshatriya level to the devotee level, and shows how, you know, they're not at all incompatible. Basically, you know, the main topic I could share with you, discuss with you, is the topic of preaching, which is what Srila Prabhupada brings out very strongly in the purport. And, you know, he uses words that, you know, nowadays if you use these words, it doesn't kind of give a very nice, doesn't sound very nice, the word, for example, propaganda. And to make propaganda against other spiritual conceptions, I'm doing communications, and definitely these are like not terms to use when you're doing communications. But Srila Prabhupada qualifies this because he says a strong devotee, and he even talks about Mahabhagavat. So it's not any devotee; it's really like very highly pure preachers, strong devotees, very firm in their knowledge and conviction. They can, you know, do propaganda against other spiritual conceptions. So that's a big difference between strong, pure, highly positioned devotees and ourselves, is that they can do that, and that's their mission. They're empowered to do that. And of course we have many examples in our line in recent times: Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and many other great devotees, even up to the present day, who are empowered to actually preach in this way. But for most of us, we have to be much more careful. And we have to kind of, you know when to preach and when we have to kind of take a step back or take care of ourselves, our own spiritual life, our own practice, our own sadhana. And when we should engage in preaching, because we're definitely a preaching movement. That's the essence of Krishna consciousness, is that we absorb Krishna consciousness ourselves and we share it with others. So better than using the word preaching, which has also sometimes a very kind of Christian connotation, is like looking down upon others and trying to tell them what they should do or what's the truth and how to behave. Nobody likes that. I think in the Vedic conception and in India, it's more about, on the one hand, sharing one's spiritual, you know, whatever realizations one has and knowledge one has, to share with others who might have less, who don't have any knowledge about Krishna consciousness. So it's more about sharing. And on the other hand, it's about debating. In Vedic culture, there's definitely the concept of debating, you know, like here Srila Prabhupada talks about conquering other philosophies, other conceptions, spiritual conceptions. So then definitely in Vedic culture there's the concept of debating, you know, people were trained in certain knowledge, in certain paths, and you could debate others, and it was purely a philosophical, logical exercise in which one should come out victorious. One spiritual practice, philosophy, theology would come out as superior to the other because of the expertise of those who were presenting it. So these are the two levels in the Vedic conception of how a devotee, somebody following the path of Krishna consciousness, engages with others. You know, on the individual level and the spiritual level, it's about sharing one's Krishna consciousness and trying to, you know, transform somebody else's heart. Like day before yesterday, Ranat Maharaj was talking about the most expert devotees, like Narada Muni. They really know how to change the heart of even the most unlikely candidates to practice Krishna consciousness. So we can see that it's so important to have this expertise, you know, to know when and how to preach, you know, to use, you know, one's intelligence to share in the right way and preach in the right way. So, you know, for us, if we look at this, you know, for somebody who is not imbibed with the mood of Krishna consciousness or our tradition, when he looks at a statement like a strong devotee makes propaganda against all other spiritual conceptions, it sounds, you know, if you take it out of context, it can sound very, very negative. Because, you know, you're talking about propaganda, which is a very bad word in nowadays. Maybe in the past less, but nowadays propaganda doesn't sound very nice. And against other spiritual paths, it's like, oh, wait, why are you against, you know, other paths and this and that? So we have to qualify this by saying that you know, it's not our position to make propaganda against other spiritual paths. But great spiritual enlightened persons, they try to present the truth. They try to present the actual, you know, how things actually are. So empowered living entities, empowered, you know, personalities, incarnations of Krishna, they come to actually present the truth. And this might seem a little harsh sometimes, but, you know, truth is the truth. So it's not that we are, you know, holding the truth or that we can represent the truth, but we can explain that. But certain personalities have that empowerment by God to actually show the differences, you know, of different practices, different spiritual conceptions. But there's definitely like a kshatriya element to the way Srila Prabhupada presented. It's like conquering flags, because from the highest spiritual platform, from the highest spiritual truth, you know, there's obviously, you know, that element that to establish Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada had that mission, many of all the great acharyas had that mission. And all those devotees who are empowered by Krishna and who are pure and who, you know, sincere, they can also be empowered to present this truth. But the problem with us arises that if we are not, you know, pure, if we're not empowered, and we think we can do it, and we go out and we try to tell people how they should behave or what to do, and debate, and even, you know, share if we don't have a lot of realization, then we have to be very careful because it can have a counter effect. So preaching is not a light thing, but it should be engaged by everyone. So we have to see to what capacity we can engage in preaching. And as we advance in Krishna consciousness, as we become more pure, then we will be empowered more and more to preach. Krishna can empower anyone to preach and spread his message. But it has to be authentic. It has to be real. You know, nobody wants like a fanatic or somebody to, you know, come out and be very righteous and tell everybody what to do and that I'm wrong, that you're wrong, and things like that. You know, this is not very popular spirituality nowadays. So we have to try to strive to go to the level of this strong, steady level. And in the last paragraph, Srila Prabhupada talks a lot about knowledge, because the element of knowledge is very important, especially if one is going to engage in any type of debate. with other spiritual traditions, if you're going to actually start debating with people about, you know, Advaita or you know, other spiritual paths or other religious traditions, then you have to be very much imbibed with knowledge and, you know, understand the subtleties of Krishna consciousness philosophy. So that is not so easy, and that requires a lot of study and training. And in this way, you know, for in the West, I would say debate is almost like never practiced. I was in a parliament a few years ago, Parliament of the World's Religions in Barcelona a few years ago, and I remember there was a Jewish representative, Christian, Muslim, and there was a Vaishnav, Madhva, Sampradaya Vaishnav. They're very much into debating philosophy. So, you know, they all spoke, and it was all very nice, and, you know, they wouldn't engage at all in any type of confrontation, especially in public like that. And then when he came to the Madhva, then he, you know, they're trained to debate, and, you know, so he had analyzed everything they said, and he started a debate and trying to kind of showing in which ways they were wrong and in which ways, you know, Vaishnavism is superior, and, you know, really a debating kind of mentality. And they were all devastated. It was like the whole room was like completely, you know, they couldn't handle it. It was, you know, debate, you know, in a spiritual gathering of Christians, Muslims, Jews, you know, who have been fighting for centuries, you know, together. How can we even consider debating and, you know, provoking this kind of confrontation? So it was a big revolution in the room. But that showed the difference between the concept of in the West of sharing, of preaching or dialogue. And in India, debate has a place, you know, to actually have philosophical debate. But in the West, that's practically unheard of. You know, it's, you know, when you say the word debate at spiritual levels and religious and philosophical level, you know, everybody kind of freezes, because it's too sensitive and they don't know how to handle it. And, you know, there's no question in the West that somebody will accept defeat, you know, by somebody else's logic and superior knowledge and, you know, commons, you know, like using logic like that. So, but it definitely has a place in our tradition, in the Vedic culture. So these are the two ways that I would say the word preaching can be used, you know, in our context. One is sharing one's spiritual realization, and the other one is debating on philosophical and, you know, logic and philosophical concepts. So one has to become very expert in preaching. One has to know about time, place, and circumstance. Are we preaching in order to establish the superiority of a certain philosophy over another, or at least certain points about the philosophy? Or are we trying to, you know, touch the person's heart? Are we really trying to transform his heart? So if that's the case, then the sharing aspect and, you know, and all the good qualities that we might have developed through the years, that will have much more power than philosophical arguments and theology and all these things. So we have to see what is our goal, you know, in the preaching. Are we trying to establish a certain path and philosophy? Then we have to be really qualified to do it. We have to study for years and have the knowledge at the tip of our hands. And the other is sharing. Anybody can share their spiritual realizations. Srila Prabhupada was very liberal in that, and he encouraged all the devotees to go out and preach and share whatever level of Krishna consciousness one has acquired, to share that with others. And people appreciate that if we do it in the right way. If there's no, you know, if we're sure that when we're preaching we put aside all the things that we might still have in the heart, like, you know, lust, anger, greed, envy, you know, that we might have not completely eradicated from our heart. If we can try to put that aside and concentrate on the mission and pleasing Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, then even if we're not at the pure level and strong devotee level, we can have effective preaching. But we also have to know when to withdraw. When we see that our preaching starts to become, you know, kind of blurred with, you know, anger and greed and you know, lust and all these things, then we have to learn how to withdraw from that engagement, because then it'll have a negative impact if we're not for ourselves, but also for the people that we're trying to help or preach to. So preaching is not an easy, it's not an easy task. It requires a lot of intelligence, of experience, realizations, purity, purity of heart. People are impressed when somebody's pure. We saw the other day when we had the visit of Radhanath Maharaj that so many devotees were really attracted to hear, especially to hear him and to see him, because the element of purity is very strong. People, it's not something that you can measure or explain philosophically or rationally, but purity is attractive. People are attracted by purity of heart. So if we're not at that level of purity that we can spontaneously attract people, we shouldn't stop preaching, but we should know how to preach, to what, you know, in what doses and to who we can preach, and protect ourselves at the same time. So I mean, there's a lot we can say about preaching because we are a preaching movement. So preaching is a very vast part of our activities. Also, you know, there's an element of different types of preaching. Also, I mean, we have in the past maybe had less types of preaching. As the movement develops, we will have more and more types of preaching. You know, for example, I'm engaged in communications, which is also definitely a preaching activity, but it has its, you know, it's a special way of preaching in which actually this aspect of, you know, presenting Krishna consciousness and trying to, you know, share our Krishna consciousness with others is very much minimized. But there are opportunities even within communications to actually touch somebody's heart and to present Krishna consciousness, but you have to do it in a way that is compatible with the service. And the service requires a lot of, like, you know, not direct preaching, not direct confrontation or direct presenting one's own spiritual realizations. That's the nature of communication preaching. But there's hundreds of other preaching activities. As we know, there's, you know, of course, the traditional, there's book distribution, and there's Harinam, but there's also many, like, preaching in colleges, preaching to guests, preaching to congregation, preaching to academics. I mean, there's many ways one can engage one's capacities and also the mission of sharing Krishna consciousness with others. As the movement will expand, it will become more and more kind of specialized, the different types of preaching, I would say. So preaching is a very vast topic and essential for us, because that's what the whole movement, the whole mission is meant to be, personal transformation and transformation of society at large. And we have to be expert and learn how to do that, how to engage with others. I mean, one extreme of the preaching ways of preaching is what I mentioned, is communications, because you actually have to be very careful what you say, how you say it, to who you say it, when you say it. There's nothing more, it's like walking on, you know, on something that might break all the time, so you have to be extremely careful, especially when the more you meet, like, leaders and religious leaders or political leaders, you know, you have to be very much aware of all these sensitivities that are there, either religious sensitivities or political sensitivities like that. And the other extreme is, like, some devotees are basically preaching only to devotees. So, you know, in every preaching activity, there's some element of risk. So in my case, the communication, the risk is that one becomes, you know, one forgets the mission, the preaching mission, and one becomes either influenced by so much philosophies one hears or so many different understandings, like here Srila Prabhupada, spiritual conceptions. There's, I can tell you, there's not just jnana, karma, and yoga out there. There's that multiplied by 1 million, because there's 1 million different types of conceptions. You know, you take jnana and it's divided into so many different philosophies, movements, traditions, and you take yoga in the same, and you take karma in the same. So in this age, there's a lot of spiritual conceptions. So we have to, you know, that's one risk of preaching, communications preaching. And then the other extreme, I would say, is some devotees, their main preaching is to actually just preach to devotees or help devotees in their services and in their spiritual life, in their activities, in the movement. And there's also risk there, because, you know, there could be familiarity, that's one thing. The other thing could be that one becomes too psychological, you know, one's only thinking about, you know, psychology and what devotees are thinking, or how to do it in a way that, you know, be able to transmit the message and get him to do service or be enlivened or continue with Krishna consciousness. So in every preaching activity we engage, the extremes or any other form, there's a risk. So the preaching has to be combined with practice, you know, with a strong sadhana, strong association, strong program, and always be able to take shelter with the devotees, with the deities, and in this way become strong again when we are sometimes weakened, because preaching means it's like a war. Srila Prabhupada is talking about going with a devotional flag unfurled. So there could be cases in which we become somewhat weakened or hurt. So we need to have a very strong basis to get that strength. But we definitely have to preach. There's no way that one can you know, continue in Krishna consciousness without preaching. Whether it's one way or the other way or some way, one has to preach. That's the only requirement that Lord Chaitanya is asking from us, is that he's giving us such a wonderful gift of Krishna consciousness. He's just asking us, you know, do some preaching, do some type of sharing, some type of preaching. You know, if we cannot debate with great philosophers, we can at least God and Harinam. You know, that's the most easy way. But we can also engage in speaking with guests, going out and visiting people in programs and in different opportunities. So we should always keep all the preaching engagements alive and flowing. And that will keep us individually healthy and also as a community healthy, because usually if we don't preach, then we start to get into many other things which are maybe not so nice. So we have to also be careful with that. So preaching is very, very, you know, it's not an easy activity. It requires a lot of purity, knowledge, expertise, you know, being able to hear, also very good, to hear others. And we have to be careful, because there's proper preaching and there's also improper preaching, you know. And that's what improper preaching is worse than no preaching. It means better if you stay, if you're not, you know, empowered and strong and sometimes when we preach in a fanatic way, or, you know, in a way that offends people, that is a negative way of preaching, and that has obviously a negative effect. And I would say that all the achievements ISKCON has had in the last 40 years are because of proper preaching, and all the problems that we have is because of improper preaching to ourselves, to others. And that, you know, that has a negative feedback. So we have to become expert in preaching in the right way, in sharing in the right way, in debating in the right way. And in this way we will, you know, be able to have a proper impact and transformational impact on ourselves and others, society at large. But, you know, definitely we have to be careful, because preaching is it's you know, something we have to do it properly. So any questions, any advice on how to preach from experience? How to...
It's not advice, it's a question. So just reflecting the point of preaching, is you're saying is such an important service, the essence of our practice, of our day. But at the same time, just reflecting on how Srila Prabhupada was behaving towards others. He was definitely preaching them, he was definitely cutting them, he was definitely sharp, he was trying to establish bridges, and then at the same time just following the truth, and that's all. In the same time, he wanted to start, and then following the truth, it was natural. And I'm just now reflecting on what's really appropriate to Siddhanta and that's the fact. Because I'm just a very appropriate Srila Prabhupada, and Siddhanta Prabhupada is really not in the best to, you know,
Srila Prabhupada is Srila Prabhupada. But I think you have in his behavior, you have, you know, examples of both. Okay, a lot of examples of you know exactly what he's mentioning here, to conquer other conceptions of transcendental realization and propaganda against other spiritual conceptions. That was definitely his mission, and he was empowered to do so. But you also have many examples of Srila Prabhupada being very humble and very at ease and comfortable with other religious people, religious traditions, and like that. You know, so, you know, I think, you know, we can't imitate, we can't force something or be artificial, because it has to be real, it has to be from the heart, it has to be with full knowledge, with full compassion and mercy. So the moment we want to imitate Prabhupada or do something without the empowerment and the purity, then it has a counter effect. You know, we can't imitate, we can't do the same. So we can follow in the footsteps. So it means we have to learn how to preach according to our capacity, to our empowerment, to our purity. Because if you try to do something that you're not, or imitate Prabhupada, then you get into big trouble. It's definitely not the process. And we've seen so many devotees try to imitate Prabhupada, because Prabhupada did it and we have to do it. Then what happens? We get into trouble and we make a mess of Srila Prabhupada's mission, because, you know, people can tell the difference between Srila Prabhupada and me, for example, or you or anybody. That, you know, they can feel that purity is not there, that stature is not there, the knowledge is not there. So, you know, if we can come to the level of being a pure, unalloyed, empowered preacher, then of course we can follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada and do very amazing preaching activities and engage in this, you know, sometimes strong, but sometimes also not so strong, more soft. And I mean, I wouldn't say that Srila Prabhupada is only, you know, presenting Krishna consciousness in this strong, clear, and powerful way. He was also sometimes being very gentle and compassionate, and seeing the sincerity in others, in other traditions, in other followers. You know, I think that both are there.
Purity is
definitely. Well, that's Krishna consciousness, which is not something somebody can tell you or automatically give it to you or anything. It's something that you develop yourself. So when all others can do is simply advise, share experience, you know, help us to avoid, you know, pitfalls or things that we've seen in the movement or in our own spiritual development. But ultimately, it's up to us to judge, and you know, to see what we can do. If our preaching doesn't have effect, and if people become angry and agitated and disturbed, and you know, it means might be something wrong with our preaching. And if we start to think, well, you know, they're demons, and you know, and I'm, then you know, something's wrong, because I don't, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, when he preached, he transformed so many people's hearts. So many people became devotees, and even the non-devotees, you know, you don't, you know, there's no like big agitation against Srila Prabhupada or anything like that, because even if you know, he would engage with him, and even if he would say something sometimes strong, because of his purity, it was not take so much as an offense. Well, we might offend, you know, half of the planet, and everybody hates us, and you know nobody's enlivened, nobody's and we might be even maybe sometimes repeating the same thing that Srila Prabhupada says. So it's not so much only the words that you say, but the purity, the empowerment behind it.
So So then, like we said, it doesn't, you know, like here, it's not really, the West isn't really applying, but it is yet the essence, as you see, it's more of the possibility of the person to transform others because of his purity and understanding had to do at the right time, the exponential.
Yeah, I would say in the West everything is messed up, but I would say that also in the West debate has a place in the sense that, you know, many of the Srila Prabhupada's followers and it might not happen like in a such a, you know, extreme or noble way as in India, where if you were defeated you would become the follower of that person and his philosophy and his tradition. It might not happen like that, but definitely if there would be a little bit more debates amongst you know, different traditions and philosophies, many people would hear those debates and they would, out of their own conclusions, see, oh, you know, this is logical, this makes sense, this is philosophically stronger, and it has an impact. It's maybe not in such a, you know, clear-cut way as in India, but, and even in India, I don't know if that happens so much anymore, but it was a tradition that happened for centuries. But I think people are definitely influenced by different philosophies and the debates that occur. So you just have to know when to debate and how to debate in a way that it doesn't agitate people or disturb people, but that people can actually analyze the difference between this tradition and what they're offering and this. You know, like we can't go on a crusade against, you know, Buddhist and against this and against that, but we can, you know, when my experience is that, you know, generally you don't get involved in this kind of confrontation. But sometimes when the opportunity arises, when people are ready to hear, because many times people are ready to actually hear, okay, so what is the difference between Vaishnavism and Buddhism or this or that? And at those occasions, might be like very kind of specific, very concrete moments, you actually give the difference, the superior philosophy, or, you know, or at least the understanding that we have. And I think people are impressed by philosophy also and by theology. But it has to be done in a way that, you know, that is proper. I think because of the tensions and even the wars between religious people from different traditions, there's a tendency now in the world to say, okay, at least first let's be able to dialogue without war and violence and hatred and all these things. And then, as a maybe higher level, when people can come to that point of not hating each other or fighting with each other, then you can engage in the higher level, which is discussing the differences, the philosophies, and you know, then people can actually choose themselves which spiritual conception they feel is, you know, the strongest, the most clear, the one that would benefit me the most and really satisfy me, etc. But the problem is that through history there's been so much fighting between different, you know, spiritual conceptions that the mood in general now is, okay, at least let's stop the fighting, especially amongst the Jewish, Christian, Muslims, there's so much animosity that the mood is, you know, debates, philosophy, maybe a few can do that, but let's in general just get along and not fight and kill each other and things like that.
And I see it very much connected, because if you want to stop fighting, fighting is not because of religion, you connect with other people, philosophy. First start with philosophy, and then because you understand,
But like here Srila Prabhupada talks about other spiritual conceptions, so that means there are other spiritual conceptions which hopefully, you know, don't encourage fighting and things like that. But he's even talking of defeating those spiritual conceptions. It means even if people can be in goodness or you know not engage in these lower activities, even then we should still preach to actually show the attractiveness of Krishna, of Krishna consciousness, of you know, our tradition and all that. So, you know, that's a little bit why it's a little difficult, because you have, okay, the spiritual discussions and like Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, then you have the reality of the world, which is also a lot of, you know, kind of confrontation and fighting. So how to deal with, you know, with both levels. In other words, when you're not pure, even if you're a devotee, even if you're a follower of Lord Chaitanya, if you're not pure, you will engage in things which are not at all spiritual. You know, you will, you know. So you have to really purify yourself. You have to come to the higher level, and even there, you can have debates and discussions on, you know, jnana and karma and bhakti and even in devotional service, you have so many different conceptions of service to God. So, you know, we have a very particular mission, which is to show the highest service to Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, following in the footsteps of the Gopi. So you can, there's so many levels, but we're dealing with many levels at the same time, so that's not easy, because you're dealing with some people are at a level where there's, you know, they're still influenced by passion and ignorance and willing to fight and all that. Then you have with other people who are in the mode of goodness, who, you know, they're gone beyond that, but still they might have different conceptions of what is spiritual and what is not spiritual, and who is God and who is not God. And there's a lot of people like that also in the world. You know, there's a lot of people who have, you know, who are, you know, trying to establish themselves in goodness, but they have all kinds of understandings. That's what I'm saying. Nowadays, it's these three multiplied by a million, because you have so many different varieties, so many different types of philosophies and movements and groups, and Srila Prabhupada, you know, came with some very specific offering, very, you know, high spiritual understanding. Yeah, so if the form of preaching that you've chosen is to distribute books, the ones who get the least distracted even by so many things are the ones who are preaching the most and who are the most empowered. So if somebody, you know, gives out 100 books but didn't so-called preach so much or talk so much, if that was the type of preaching that he chose, he's actually preaching the most. Somebody else might be preaching the whole day, talking the whole day, and he gives out one book. So if that's the type of preaching that he chose, which is to distribute books, then he hasn't preached much, because he didn't give many books. Yeah, that's a capacity. But, you know, some devotees, they like to speak a lot, and they forget to distribute the books sometimes. So there are preaching engagements where speaking, you know, like here, for example, if you like to speak, you know, you can take care of the guests and speak the whole day. And, you know, distributing the books is not the main focus. While if you want to distribute books, then the focus is distributing the books, and speaking is, you know, less. Anyway, it's just... I just follow up on what you were saying, that the best preachers in book distribution are the ones who actually don't speak so much, who actually, by their purity, they inspire people to take the book and discover Srila Prabhupada and read themselves. Kaushalya?
The responsibility of taking care of life and so on. also he was a senior life experience, so
mm-hmm.
being able to be related to people,
yeah.
and also being able to be related to humans, so knowing how to deal with the other people, because he had been with the father also. So in that context, I think getting well established and properly situated in our ashram culture, it seems important to become strong.
To be well situated will help us to become strong devotees, to be able to do the preaching, whatever preaching we can do and we will do. Any other comments?
I think we see that this Krishna consciousness is very big. We have Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, Chaitanya, there is like an ocean. So in the preaching, there's individual preaching and group preaching. You can preach to one person, or you can preach to 1,000 persons. So the difference, I think, is that when you preach to an individual person, you have to see how is the person. I mean, when I was in Argentina, I took this how to sell classes, how to sell things. And in this class, they teach you that you have to see how is the person. If he's, for example, a woman, you will not speak about war, you will not speak about this thing, you should speak about some sweet things. So you can sell this thing. If it's a person who's very tough, with earrings and things like this, you will speak about this kind of thing. So we have this, and this philosophy, we have Mahabharata, and also we have the Rasa Lila, we have very sweet things and very tough things. So the preaching is that you have to see how is the situation of the person. You have to be very intelligent to preach. So it's a situation, but in general, I think that people like what is more sweetness, in general. Even the tough guy, they like to. So we have the philosophy that what is the soul, the transmigration of the soul. Also we have the pastimes of Radha Krishna. This is the most elevated. But still, I think this is good for everyone. The Vaishnavacharya says that we should not speak too much about this because it's very elevated. But still, it's very attractive to everyone. The pastimes of Krishna, Vrindavan, with the gopis, with the cows, with his friends. This is attractive to everyone. But still, we see that a person needs or wants to spiritual knowledge. We have the Mahabharata about wars. I know a lot of devotees, they're Kshatriyas by nature. And they love to read the Mahabharata, all these words. So I think it's more that we have to use our intelligence in preaching and see the situation. How is the person? So intelligence is very important in preaching.
Harinam Sankirtan ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanandi. Thank you.